I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, the saga of Seattle's homeless landlord has come to an end.
It's just a huge relief. I mean, I'm still shaken up. The feeling's not over.
Plus, Governor Jay Inslee is pressed on the disastrous state of our juvenile detention system and some unbelievable approaches to the crime crisis. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. I was doing the, what do you call this? The walk like an Egyptian. This was my dance to our opening music. I always have a little bit of a dance going on and I try to end it before we get into the show. I'm feeling good today though. Best hair day ever for me. And if you only listen to the podcast, wow, you're really missing out because... wow. I'm very humble. However, my hair looks great humble. Today.
Very. You're bringing back the mermaid look, I think.
Yeah, you know, I've been like growing my hair out and just anyway, feeling good. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. No, I'm just kidding. I got that out of the way early. Maybe I'm feeling good because we're starting the show with good news, which feels so hard to come by lately. But Nicole and I are sitting here after the show yesterday, and we received some wonderful news that the man who has become known as Seattle's homeless landlord finally has his house back after a year-long saga. We first heard about Jason Roth's ordeal from our friend Jason Rantz at KTTH, who published a story that went viral nationally. The headline, Nightmare Tenant Made Seattle Landlord Go Homeless. And it detailed the story about how Jason Roth, 32 years old, had bought a house in South Seattle, fixed it up, decided to rent it out. And then the person he chose to rent it to just never paid him rent. And he ended up himself living often in his sleeper van with his dog, Wally, crashing on couches of his friends while he tried to deal with this situation at the home that he owned. So Jason Roth first joined us here on the Undivided podcast back in October of last year. 32 years old, homeowner. Virtually homeless.
Yeah. I mean, could I go find another apartment, like a dirt cheap bedroom somewhere? Probably. But I have school to pay for. I have bills. I have this house to pay for. Like, I don't want to go into debt. I mean, I will sleep wherever I need to make sure I don't, you know, go into debt or start struggling in other ways. I will sacrifice my comfort right now to get this done.
So the man that Jason Roth was renting this home to, his name is Kareem Hunter, and he wasn't some down on his luck, you know, lost his job during the pandemic sort of person. It was very clear that he knew he could use Seattle's strong tenant protections to take advantage of the system and live in this home rent-free, which he was able to do successfully for about a year, until Jason Roth says his luck turned around. He's going to explain that to us coming up momentarily. But he says Wednesday morning, he sent us the photographs. The King County Sheriff's Office showed up along with Jason Roth, and they were able to serve a successful eviction to get that deadbeat tenant out of that house. So Jason talked to us earlier on this morning about what happened and what he's been through. Jason Roth, where are you?
In front of my house.
Okay, you're in front of it, but can you go in it? Are you?
I can go in it, yes. I'm finally allowed to go into my house.
Wow, you must feel great.
It's just a huge relief. I mean, I'm still shaken up. It's not, the feeling's not over. I still have this guy's stuff to deal with I'm looking at right here, but yeah, huge relief.
What have you, so they came in and the sheriff's office was present for you to, you know, issue an eviction Wednesday morning. You mentioned that his stuff is still there. Can you show us? Can you flip the camera around?
Yeah. I think this is stuff he didn't want. And now I'm his junk removal service.
Oh my gosh. So now you're responsible. No one helps you with that. You have to do that.
Nope. I got my truck here. I'm going to be doing Goodwill runs, dump runs. Not only am I responsible for this, but if someone gets hurt with the stuff out here or like ingest something or whatever, I'm on the hook for that. So I barely slept last night. I was like, you know, what does that mean? Like, what if someone steals it? So I put caution tape around it. I was trying to be as respectful. I put a tarp down, but you know, he didn't pick it up. I think he just, this is garbage, and he knew it was on my dime to throw it away.
Gosh. So talk about, before we get into what happened, just talk about how things went when you showed up, you had the lawful eviction, and the sheriff's deputies were there.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty straightforward. I was a little nervous. I didn't know what was going to happen. Or I've obviously never done an eviction before, but the sheriffs were super professional. They came in, they knocked on the door, and they said, look, you've had all the time in the world. You had every chance. Like, at this point, you got to get off the property, and he's going to move your stuff out. You know, they let him grab what his like personal belongings, and he, you know, argued with them a little bit. I don't know exactly what he was saying. I'm sure it was trying to make more excuses, but they brought him outside. I have great friends and family that were here to help, and we moved everything out carefully. Didn't break anything.
Yeah. So you had mentioned, you know, that this wasn't a surprise to him because, you know, you kind of went quiet for a while. You can talk about why that was, because when you called and you said, hey, he's out, he's gone, I'm like, what? How did this get resolved? So you had, yeah, there was actually a date where he was had agreed to move out and he didn't. And so that's why the eviction was served. So talk about what happened that led you from the last time we talked to you when this guy was still squatting in your house to now.
Yeah, there was. So I joined Rental Housing Association, and that was the big change of all this where things started looking up. I became a RHA member. I didn't even know they existed until somewhat recently. They helped me find a lawyer that was better suited for my situation. They gave me a lot of good advice. And some of that was sort of like, you know, stay on the down low for a little while until this is over. And the lawyer that they were able to find me, who they recommended, was awesome. And he came up with a settlement that they agreed to, which is part of the reason like the eviction actually happened. It made us so we didn't have to go to court. And, you know, as soon as it was over, I called you because it was over. Didn't want to jinx anything.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, even though you had the settlement, an attorney who finally helped you at least stop all of the delays that they were putting you through, I still feel like you're getting the short end of the stick a little bit because you get your house back, but he doesn't have to pay you any of the back rent, right? That he owes you for a year?
So, yeah, I mean, it feels like a win because it's been like the worst year of my life. Well, not like, it's been the worst year of my life. And you're right. I mean, in the settlement, the only way they agreed to a settlement is if he leaves, no money exchanges hands. No, that doesn't mean I can't sue him later for the money, but, you know, I can't speak to that or not right now. At this point, I'm just focused on moving back in. I'm not even thinking about that. But he doesn't get an eviction on his record. There's an order of limited dissemination, meaning I don't think it can be reported to credit companies. Basically, if someone hasn't been watching the news, he could do this again to someone else. It's a shame. And I'm thankful that you guys and other media want to show it because it shows the truth. It shows that this is unbelievable that this is considered a win.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm out. It cost almost $30,000 in legal defense, and not to mention the $60,000 to $70,000 in lost rent.
Insane.
Plus all the other stuff. Plus he left with a utility bill that's $2,500. So it just adds up.
Wow. That's insane. And I think, you know, the no eviction on his record speaks to a bigger problem because you as a landlord, you could go through and do your due diligence. But if you have things like this that aren't on paper, I mean, what is your advice to landlords about how do you even try to protect against a deadbeat tenant?
I mean, I'll say it again. I would join Rental Housing Association. Unless you're a lawyer and a landlord and you're constantly following up, you know, with the housing committee and the new laws being passed and the regulations, it is an impossible task to be a landlord, you know, go about your life and be up to date on this stuff. So it's actually really hard. It's not an easy task.
Yeah. So I guess my big question is, are you going to rent the house out again?
Not right now. I mean, if buddies want to live here and you know, just make it feel good again, that's fine. But I'm not renting it out in the near future.
No. And I was happy because almost immediately when you called, I said, send us pictures. And one of the pictures you sent was Wally. He looked happy. And I know you got a lot of work ahead. Was the house in okay condition?
Yeah, he was pretty clean. He didn't, he was pretty methodical and clean. But that just speaks to how he scammed the system. He did it in the same respect. But thankfully for me, the house was not trashed. I mean, it was dirty. And, you know, he had been constantly cleaning the Airbnb unit. So it was basically like ready to move in.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, Jason Roth, people who've been following your story with intrigue, I saw a lot of happy notes on social media when they heard that you were back in the house. Any parting words of advice?
Yeah, I would say just due diligence. If you're going to be a landlord or you know anyone in Seattle is going to be a landlord, make sure they know what they're getting into. Make sure they know the laws. You know, if they're so inclined, become an RHA member. Don't let what happened to me happen to you. I mean, If I can get anything positive out of this is to make sure this doesn't happen to even one other person, because it was miserable. It was miserable for me. It was miserable for my entire family, for all my friends who let me stay at their house and stuff. I mean, it was just like just a terrible, terrible year. So if you're thinking about being a landlord, or even if you know somebody who has a rental, just, you know, show them this. And just be careful. It is wild out there.
Yeah. Well, one less affordable house option on the market for people in the city of Seattle. So very contrary to what our politicians say they wanted to accomplish with.
Can I speak to that really quick? I have something I want to say about that. You know, you're right about that. There were bedrooms available here for $500 to $700 for years, and it was awesome to have an affordable rental. And you know, there were some commentary around the internet about, you know, making me to seem like the bad guy and then this tenant to be the hero. It's like, how could you pick that type of person as the person to stand behind? I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. This is a guy who's a professional scam artist who knows how to work the system absolutely perfectly and who's taken resources away from other people who need it. From the lawyer to the house itself. I mean, this is not your guy to stand behind as an example for tenant rights. That blew my mind when I saw some of that stuff pop up on the internet.
It is pretty wild. It just shows like the ideology and how fierce it can be. And again, I think it's worth reiterating, this isn't someone who is like down on his luck, lost a job, who, you know, this is someone who from the very beginning, I think it's clear, never intended to pay you.
Brandy, I'm about to go throw away Prada shoe boxes. I'm not kidding.
There's Prada shoe boxes?
In that pile of stuff right there, there's Prada shoe boxes. I mean, the fact that people could look at this guy as a victim, I don't know. It's insult to injury, and it's just horrible. I mean, yeah.
No, this is a guy who was taking videos of himself on yachts, on vacation, while he was living in your house, rent-free.
You saw that.
Ridiculous. Yeah. All right, Jason Roth, God bless you. Thank you for letting us come along on this crazy journey. Give Wally a little pat on the head for us, and good luck moving back in.
Thank you. No, thank you for telling the story. Appreciate it.
Bittersweet. So gets the house back, doesn't get any of the back rent, has to clean up the guy's Prada boxes. I mean, you can't make that stuff up. He told me that. I was like, there's no way. Go take a picture. And he took a picture. And is that a Burberry bag next to it? I'm not sure. Honestly, ridiculous. And again, you know, you had far left blogs who were like, oh, this is an evil landlord, you know, trying to kick out some black man onto the streets or whatever. No, you took one look at this guy's social media and you knew exactly what he was doing. He was absolutely manipulating the system. Sorry, I don't even own Prada. I don't know if that's a real Burberry purse. I don't have a Burberry anything. And it's like, come on, man. So ridiculous. And I would like to believe that the Seattle politicians who pushed through these strict landlord protection or tenant protections and gave all the tenants free attorneys if they were going to get evicted, maybe they had the best of intentions, But the outcome isn't that. The outcome is people like Kareem Hunter taking advantage of people like Jason Roth and then finding lefty news agencies to hold water for them. Ridiculous. But Jason's back home, cleaning up his yard, getting things back in order, and doesn't have to sleep in his camper van anymore with little Wally. Good news to start the show. Now let's go downhill and talk about Governor Inslee and the state of our criminal justice system for juveniles in Washington. We've talked about this, whether it's escapes, assaults on guards, guards participating in criminal behavior with some of these juvenile offenders. All measure of things are happening within our juvenile detention system. And up to this point, Governor Inslee has basically said, we have it handled. No big deal. Oh, finding drugs and contraband and all of this. No big deal. We've got it handled. I'm sure DCYF is good. Well, now Governor Inslee is being pressed by Fox 13 News. They were able to catch up to him at some unrelated event about some of the latest happenings inside Green Hill, which again is down in Chehalis, the Green Hill School, as they call it. According to Fox 13 News, Michelle Goodman, a 30-year-old, who worked at Green Hill, is accused of being involved with an inmate that was jumped in January, or is accused of being involved with the in this is written poorly, an inmate who was jumped in January. That inmate allegedly heard Goodman having a conversation where she was asked if she was okay turning a blind eye to the event before it took place. Court documents obtained by Fox 13 News indicate that she replied, "It's my job," before being recorded on security footage roughly 20 feet away from the incident. A second employee was investigated after she admitted to bringing weed-infused gummies and placing them in a locker that residents have access to. She claimed she was unaware, though it's unclear how the items made it through security protocols that are meant to stop contraband making it into the Green Hill facility. So again, the long list, I mean, I think there was like something like 20 911 calls in a month span out of Green Hill. A mom whose son was detained at Green Hill calling 911 to send someone to a state-run juvie facility to do a 911 or to do a welfare check on her son. Like, things are clearly out of control, and Governor Inslee has basically said, oh, things are fine, we're working on it, better training and all this stuff. But in light of these two latest stories that have come out in this Fox 13 reporting, they went to track Inslee down and talk to him more about it.
We know that in a span of 6 weeks between the end of 2023 and early 2024, investigators were called out at least seven times for what was referred to as prison riots, one involving at least six people. As for the governor's office, they've kicked the can each time we've tried to sit down. So we finally plan to meet up with Governor Inslee at an event where he was scheduled to speak.
Since they've made changes, we've seen arrests, we've seen drugs, we've seen employees get in trouble, a riot just a couple weeks ago. Do you continue to have confidence in DCYF and why?
Well, we need to make more changes at Green Hill. I met just yesterday, as a matter of fact, with our leadership, with Department of Corrections. We think there are some security upgrades that we can have there to reduce the chance of fentanyl and other drugs getting in.
To be clear, DCYF oversees Green Hill, not the DOC. It's part of a shift the legislature voted on 6 years ago and Inslee signed off on. It allows people up to 25 to stay in juvenile facilities for crimes committed under the age of 18. And while Inslee didn't really answer our questions about his level of faith in DCYF, we did get the chance for one additional question before his team stepped in and stopped us.
I think that things are going to be looking up as time goes on. But we do have challenges throughout the juvenile justice system. And the reason is we have now put 23, 24, and 25-year-olds in the same place with young kids. We've never done this before. This is creating new challenges in security.
Yeah, you did that. You wanted to do that. You don't say 23, 24, 25-year-olds, hardened adult criminals in some instances. You don't say it's creating new security challenges to have them in a juvie center with like a 16-year-old who's in there because he committed his first crime? Unreal. And so then he's talking about, oh, we're fixing things. We talked to Department of Corrections. Department of Corrections has nothing to do with Green Hill. You made sure of that. You signed the law that made sure of that. They should have something to do with Green Hill. And they should have something to do with the 18 to 25-year-olds who are in Green Hill because they should be in DOC. They should be in Department of Corrections with the rest of the adult criminals because they're committing adult crimes. I mean, we don't send kids to a juvie hall in this state unless they've done something pretty severe. If you're, how many stories have we done? Steal a car? Oh, no big deal. Like, okay, go home. Drive-by shooting, house arrest, you know? And so if you're in Green Hill, even if you're a juvenile, you've done something pretty bad. And then the 1825 crowd, get him out of there. You know, get him out of there and send him to DOC. And then let's deal with the actual juvenile offenders and work in programs to get their lives turned around before they hit 18 and commit crimes again that are going to land them in DOC. So the governor wants to act like, oh, we're working on it. What do you say there? Things will get better as time goes on. I'm sorry, I'm not going to take your word for that. And can you give us some detail as to how things will get better as time goes on? The only way I can think that things will get better as time goes on is as time goes on, you're not going to be the governor anymore. And that's how things are going to get better, is when you're out of office in January. Hopefully we have a governor, not Bob Ferguson, who's willing to actually take the necessary steps to turn our not only our entire criminal justice system around, but the juvenile justice system in particular. And if it's Bob Ferguson, that's not going to happen. Because remember, the law enforcement down near Green Hill, they wanted to go in. They had evidence of criminal behavior. They wanted to go in and search Green Hill for further evidence to build those cases. And they wrote to the governor's office. They asked him to ask the attorney general's office to investigate. And governor, attorney general, no, that's not necessary. That's not necessary. So they had to serve a search warrant on the place, on a state-run juvenile facility. So, you know, it's this mindset that, oh, young people, they're all redeemable, and we have to just focus on that. Look, try to redeem them. That's great. Try to make sure that when they get out, they're not going to commit crimes again. But also remember what they did to get in there. And their age doesn't make them any less dangerous. Crazy stuff. So good good reporting from Fox 13.
Where is Ross Hunter?
Where is Ross Hunter?
This guy needs to go as much as Inslee does.
I was, Representative Travis Couture sent me a picture, and it was just a picture, and it was the front page of a newspaper that said, Superintendent resigns. Mm-hmm. And my immediate thought was, oh my gosh, the superintendent of DCYF resigned, because Travis Couture has been so passionate about the issues with DCYF. No, but it was the superintendent, which is another story we should talk about today. The superintendent of the Kitsap School District resigned. Do you see that?
Well, did she have a choice?
I don't know. But the little sign stealer.
I would hope.
There's no way you could go back.
I mean, it's about time.
Yeah, so I told Representative Couture, I was like, maybe the next headline that says superintendent resigns will be the superintendent of the Department of Children, Youth, and Families.
I think he's called the secretary, but...
Whatever.
But yeah,
is he needs to go. Oh, he is the secretary. Right. Superintendent. But, wishful thinking.
Yeah.
Wishful thinking.
He needs to go. And hopefully, Chris Reichdahl would be the other superintendent that we know. But
yeah,
we just hope he's voted out soon.
Yeah, I mean, Chris comes in. He's a nice enough guy. So I don't go after him with the fervor. I'm still disappointed with our education system. And I feel like he's leaning into all of that instead of pushing back against it. But I won't make it as personal with Chris, because I don't think he's a horrible human being.
Right.
All right. Coming up next, the market is betting against the Climate Commitment Act. I'll explain what we mean by that. First, I've been encouraging you all to take the First Mark Challenge. Do you have insurance? Yes. Well, I hope so. Do you need insurance? Yes. We all have to have insurance on things. That's just a matter of life. But if you don't have an insurance broker helping you out, I mean, right now, more than ever, is the time to get one. The nice thing about First Mark Insurance is you never pay them a dime to do this work for you. They have been in the insurance business locally for a long time. They're real human beings who are going to pick up the phone when you have a claim to make or changes to make. What the First Mark Insurance First Mark Challenge entails is you meet with them on the phone virtually for about an hour, talk about your insurance needs. They go out, they shop the market for you and come back with their recommendations. Maybe you needed better insurance. Maybe you needed a better price. Dave Taylor is the CEO of First Mark.
I really want to encourage folks, don't try to navigate this current market by yourself. Mm-hmm. I believe you need to get with a broker. Okay, obviously I'd love them to come to First Mark, but at a minimum they need to be with a broker that works with numerous carriers that can give them the advice they need and really help them navigate this right now, because it's complicated.
Yeah, and they can also help give you peace of mind. You know, it's almost like somebody double checking your work. If you've gone out and you've shopped for insurance yourself, you think you have pretty good insurance at a good price, let First Mark check on that for you. Again, for free. It just costs you a little bit of time. They might come back and say, actually, yeah, good job. You don't need us. Your insurance is great. And come back to us in the future if you have questions. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. All right, so we are speeding toward the November election. I swear, I'm going to go to sleep and wake up and we'll be there, because time is just flying frickin' by. But of course, we're going to hear a lot between now and then about the three initiatives that will be on the ballot, including the initiative to repeal Governor Inslee's Climate Commitment Act. Now, I tend to believe that voters will repeal it. I am sure there are some people who disagree with me, but right now, the market the companies that are out there buying the carbon credits that they're forced to buy through these auctions that result then in higher prices at the gas pump, they seem to believe that this thing is going to get repealed in November. And so they're hedging their bets. So our friend Todd Myers, who keeps us up to date on all of these things and this complicated carbon auction trading system that only he can explain, he tweeted out yesterday, wow, Washington CO2 allowance auction results show a massive decrease in the price, just above the minimum bid and half of the average price last year. It is clear that bidders think Initiative 2117, which would repeal the CO2 tax, is going to pass in November. And so I looked at that and I got in touch with Todd. I said, Todd, you need to explain that to me like I'm five. Why do lower auction prices for carbon credits indicate to you that the bidders, the companies that have to buy those credits, believe that it'll be repealed? And here's how he explained it to me. So the bottom line is, if you're a polluter and you are under law required to buy these credits, you have to collect them, basically. You got to collect the credits and then you turn them in next year. So the credits they're buying at these auctions now don't have to be turned in until next year. But what the low price at the auction says is they're like, okay, we have to buy these, but what if it's repealed in November and then we bought them for nothing? Because if they've got this basket of carbon credits they purchased and this gets repealed, they don't get their money back for those carbon credits. They just have to eat the cost. So they want to buy them for as cheap as possible. They know it's possible they might have to turn them in, but just in case voters repeal the thing, they don't want these carbon credits that cost them a ton of money that they just have to write off. So what that shows, and then you have what he describes as speculators. So businesses that have to buy these carbon credits by law are limited in how much they can buy. So what you have are speculators who come in who aren't required to buy them by law, but they buy them anyway, they scoop them up. And then when you've got like BP that's like, man, we need more carbon credits. Well, I'll have to go to one of these people who scalped them and I'll have to buy it for some crazy amount of money. So you've got these speculators who come in and they buy up the credits and then they sell them down the road for more money to BP or whoever it was. Well, during this auction, the speculators weren't buying any carbon credits. Why? Because they're worried that they won't have anyone to sell them to. Because they're hedging their bets. This shows the belief that those speculators, that the companies believe it's very possible that voters end up repealing the Climate Commitment Act in November. And the carbon credits that have been purchased won't be worth a damn thing. So this is very interesting to watch play out. And I appreciated Todd. We chatted on the way over so he could explain it to me this morning. And I actually told him we'd love to have him on next week to talk a little bit more about what we're seeing here. And I also anticipate some new polling coming out on the initiatives and public opinion on those initiatives. And it's just going to be a big fight, I think, moving forward, trying to explain the impacts of the Climate Commitment Act in a way that's easy to understand. I think the easiest way is, hey, it's raising your gas prices. It's raising your gas prices and Governor Inslee lied about it. But also you'll see a ton of lies pushed on the other side to try to confuse the issue. But interesting stuff. I appreciate Todd watching that so we don't have to try to watch the carbon markets and then coming out and explaining what it means to all of us. Coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, we're going to go up to Canada and down to California to talk about some interesting approaches to the crime crises. First, I've been encouraging you guys to reach out to Wes Jones if you are thinking about selling your home at any point this year. You know, the real estate market was not great in 2023. In 2024, there, you know, people like Wes Jones are waiting anxiously to see if the Fed drops interest rates, and then you'll have kind of a rush to the market. But he says that even if the Fed doesn't drop interest rates here in the first half of the year, for instance, he still does think, because of, you know, there being so much demand out there, that 2024 is going to be a better year for the market than 2023.
If we're sitting stagnant at where we're at now, we're still going to see more sales. We're going to see more people transact in 2024 than we did in 2023. I feel really strongly about that. Nationwide, we sold about 4 million homes, residential units, in 2023. I think that's going up. It'll be more like 4.5 million. There's too much pent up demand. If they stay where they're at right now, I actually think that values will stay closer to where they're at. We'll see lower appreciation. We'll see appreciation, but it'll be modest. But if they start to come back down, well, that's when I think we'll start to see more of the multiple offer situations and the bid ups in home sale prices.
Yeah. So regardless, if you're planning to sell your home this year, the best thing you can do is just get it ready. First of all, if you go to sellwithwes.com, contact Wes, he's going to give you a free market analysis so you can set your expectations correctly. And then he's going to talk about some of the services they offer, like the Listing Boost concierge service, in case you need to make some cosmetic upgrades to your home. Get started with that early so you're ready to go, especially if the Fed drops interest rates and then you're on the market day one, taking advantage of that increased demand. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Police in Canada want to make it much, much easier for criminals to steal your car. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. I guess sometimes it's nice to know that not only are we not the only state dealing with a crime crisis, but we're not even the only country dealing with a crime crisis and a crisis of stolen vehicles. So in Toronto, Canada, there is a big issue with car theft. But it's even scarier because a lot of what they're seeing are these criminals armed going into homes to find the key to those vehicles to take them from your driveway. And there have been several instances of those criminals holding up homeowners at gunpoint to hand over their keys. And so obviously it escalates what would be, you know, a car theft from a parking lot or something into an armed home invasion. So this is a report from Canadian News about the advice that Toronto police are now giving citizens to avoid a dangerous situation like that.
Constable Marco Ricciardi had a new message for vehicle owners who keep their fobs in Faraday pouches.
To prevent the possibility of being attacked in your home, leave your fobs at your front door. Because they're breaking into your home to steal your car. They don't want anything else. A lot of them that they're arresting have guns on them, and they're not toy guns, they're real guns. They're loaded.
So instead of, and look, if I had to choose between my car getting stolen and someone pointing a gun at my face, yeah, I'd want my car to be stolen. But you're telling me that those are the options for people? Like, hey, they're going to get your keys anyway, and they're going to do it at gunpoint. So just leave your key fob by your door. Just leave your key fob right there by your door. Hell, why not just roll down your windows and leave your key fob in the cup holder? I mean, if you're going to tell them to leave it at the door, you might as well just tell them leave it in the cup holder.
Save the door.
I also looked at what a Faraday pouch is. I'd never heard of that. Have you?
I hadn't.
It's like a pouch you can drop things in, and it's used to block electromagnetic fields. So maybe like stop people. Maybe it's something in Canada that they've encouraged people to put their keys and their garage door openers and their credit cards in. I don't know. But anyway, they're saying don't leave it in your Faraday pouch.
Maybe that's what we had to put just our stuff in for the Adele concert. Maybe we have to put our phones in there so you can take
maybe
pictures.
The same idea, same I guess. Idea. You can't use it, but that kind of locks it. It's like a locking pouch.
Oh,
but
yeah.
That's a terrifying state of affairs when the police have so given up on dealing with car thieves that they would just tell you, just let them make it easier for the thieves to steal your car. I feel like we're this close to getting that advice in Washington
State.
Well,
I think we do get the advice. Don't even, like, just don't leave anything in your car and leave it unlocked
right.
So they don't break your window.
Well, right. But that's like, so you don't smash in your window. Just leave. And I know a lot of people who leave their car unlocked for that reason. Like, I have nothing in there of value. If you have a newer car, it's harder to actually steal without the key.
Right.
But then it's like, okay, are they going to break into your home at gunpoint and then steal your car that way? What's going on?
What is going on?
What's going on? I mean, I know Canada is nice, but I feel like it's a little too nice just to say, put your key by your door so the thieves can take it.
I love in that report, there's all those like older people, like, what do we do?
Oh,
what do we do? And he's like, just leave it by the door and let them take it.
My gosh. So let's go from Canada down to California and a different kind of approach to crime where they're trying to make it clear to criminals that they're tough on crime.
Finally, I guess.
But I wonder what kind of impact it will have. Here's the headline from Fox News. California DA warns thieves to stay away or else, saying we're throwing the book at criminals. So there's an ad campaign put out by the Orange County District Attorney's Office in response to a rash of smash and grab robberies, home burglaries, and other crimes. The District Attorney Todd Spitzer said that he believes a lot of these crimes are being committed by people who live outside the county and come to Orange County to commit crime. Quote, Sacramento may be rolling out the red carpet for thieves, but here in Orange County, we're throwing the book at criminals who come here to steal, he said in a statement, referring to perceived soft-on-crime policies endorsed by legislators in the state capitol. Quote, if you steal, we will prosecute. It's that simple. So he's taken out billboards that literally say, and they're on the, you know, by the freeways, he says people are coming in to commit crimes, so they want them to know, and the billboards say, crime doesn't pay in Orange County. If you steal, we prosecute. And I'm thinking, I was really torn on that. I'm like, first of all, it seems like a bad use of taxpayer funds. But also, like, is that gonna do anything? Is it sort of a performative statement that, hey, we're taking crime seriously? Or if you're a criminal and you're like, I'm gonna go steal something in Orange County, you're like, wow, now they're taking that seriously. So I was sort of split on it, and it turns out our subscribers are also very split on it. Mm-hmm. Because I put that out in our daily subscriber show poll today, and I don't know if we've ever had a poll that had such varied reactions across Patreon, Locals, and X, but also was so split. Over on Locals right now, it's 57% said yes, they do believe that those billboards could be an effective deterrent to crime. And 42% on Locals saying no. Matthew says, criminals go where they don't fear arrest and prosecution. So it stands to reason if you're going to advertise, you'll go after criminals. At least a percentage of them will follow the path of least resistance. Bollybird says, in and of itself, it's not going to be effective. They better have enough police officers, prosecutors, and jail space or firm consequences at the ready for every time a crime is committed. Otherwise, it'll just be an idle threat. JP says, I wanted to vote meh, because it can be conveyed as encouraging and they have to back it up with action. And I think that's true. It's like, is the action going to be there? And the district attorney is saying, yes, it will. Over on Patreon, most people are saying no, that is not going to be an effective deterrent. Bill says the criminals will tip back their heads, laugh, and drool like rabid dogs. It's akin to just say no. If they actually prosecute, well, then maybe it will work. And I tend to believe that it does have to be, and hopefully it is a combination. Like, hey, we warned you. If you steal something, we're going to prosecute you. That it takes a lot more than words. It takes a lot more than a billboard. You have to back it up with action. But this just shows how bad crime's gotten.
Right.
The district attorney has to take out a billboard to mm-hmm. tell people, we're going to prosecute you if you steal something.
But if you saw that billboard in, let's say, Snohomish, would you steal a car in Snohomish or would you steal a car in Seattle where, you know, you can get away with anything?
But I already wouldn't steal a car in Snohomish. I would already rather go to Seattle to steal a car.
But, I mean, they're obviously having that problem. So they're... Once you see that sign, would you be deterred? Probably.
Maybe, but I tend to think if you're on, you know, the I-5, you're going in to steal something and that's your mission, are you going to turn on the brakes and flip your next view and pick a different town?
Maybe.
I don't know, maybe.
I guess. I mean, if it's going to be easier somewhere else to get away with it, because I think that California is a lot like Washington and their policies, and they're kind of letting them get away with everything right now. And so, there you go.
I do think criminals have to hear stories about actual prosecutions and arrests and things happening, mm-hmm. because, you know, you had the lefties who wanted to act like, oh, we limited police pursuits, but it's not like the criminals know that. There were literally 911 calls of criminals being like, don't pursue. This is an illegal pursuit. So I'm sorry, Monka Dingra, that doesn't really exactly hold weight.
And I'm almost now worried about those old people had it not been on the news, maybe they would have just put it by the door. And then if they got broken into, but now the criminals are like, oh, great, they got them by the door.
Well, right. Yeah, we break it, kick the door in, and then just see if it's in a little thing next to the door because the police told them to put it there for us.
Yeah.
Literally, the police told you exactly where people are going to mm-hmm. be putting their keys. Crazy. Mm-hmm. All right, before we get to national and Florida report, I've been talking about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. I'm just so happy. I feel so healthy. I told Nicole, I was like, oh, I feel jacked because I've been also, I lost the weight through Eastside. And then I started going to the gym because it gave me the energy, right? Mm-hmm. When you're like feeling overweight and a little sluggish, you don't want to go to the gym. You don't want to do anything. So Eastside Weight Loss Clinic helped me lose almost 40 pounds. And now I have the energy. I'm going to workout classes 3 days a week, going to yoga a couple days a week. I just feel good, damn it. And I look good too. Again, humble. Super mm-hmm. humble.
So humble.
But I just encourage you guys, if you've been hearing about this, you know, I've been, I think, doing ads now for Eastside for more than a year. You can have significant weight loss results in 2 months. I did. I lost almost 30 pounds in 2 months. And those results are not atypical. We hear Ben. I wonder how Ben's doing. I'll have to check in with our buddy Ben. I get photos and testimonials from listeners and viewers all the time who found wonderful success on the program because they stuck to it and they were committed. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Schedule your free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. You can do the consultation virtually. You can do the whole freaking program virtually. You never have to step foot in an office. And you can just be looking and feeling your best in time for summer. Hashtag blessed. All right, let's see, how are we doing on time? I was gonna say, should we skip Elon today? No, we'll talk about it. Just really interesting. So I'm torn. I don't know if I'm on the side of Don Lemon or Elon Musk. And that's saying a lot because I never thought I might be on the side of Don Lemon. But I don't know if I believe Don Lemon. Let me explain. So Don Lemon, you know, he gets the boot at CNN and he decides, oh, Tucker Carlson's doing it. Why don't I just do my own independent thing? He's probably like, Brandi Cruz is doing it. Why don't I just do my own independent thing? And he decides that he's going to launch his own show. And Elon Musk said proactively, hey, I'm for free speech. Like, we've got Tucker Carlson doing his show on X. Don Lemon, we'd love to have you do your show on X. So Don Lemon took that seriously and decided, okay, let's do it. Had some conversations with X. And actually made it so that his first episode comes out this coming Monday, and he decided his first guest was going to be Elon Musk. So a few days ago, they taped this interview, and he had been kind of sending out some pictures and like, oh, I'm doing an interview with Elon Musk. Well, Don Lemon just posted a video yesterday and said his deal with X to do his show is done. And he claims it's because Elon Musk did not like the questions that he asked during the interview.
Hi, everyone. Elon Musk is mad at me, and I just put out a statement about what happened between him, me, and the interview that he is apparently so upset about. But make no mistake about this. This is going to be my first episode of the Don Lemon Show this coming Monday, March 18th, so make sure you tune in. This does not change anything about the show except for my relationship with Elon and X, and there's a whole lot that went down, and I'm going to tell you about in the coming days. I know, though, that many of you were not happy that I was doing this in the first place, and you told me so. I just want you to know that I did this deal because not only do I believe in free speech, but I believed that this was the best possible chance for the work that I'm doing to reach the largest amount of people. So speaking of free speech, right, I thought the first person interview, no-brainer, Elon Musk, the man who calls himself a free speech absolutist. I asked him to do it. He willingly agreed to the interview. Throughout our conversation, I kept reiterating to him that although it was tense at times, I thought it was good for people to see and hear our exchange and that they would learn from our conversation, learn more about him, learn more about me. But apparently, free speech absolutism doesn't apply when it comes to questions about him from people like me. What did we talk about? Why is he so upset? Does he even have a reason to be upset? Make sure you watch it on Monday on YouTube and everywhere you listen to podcasts, and you can decide for yourself. You can even watch it on X because I'm still going to post it there, and I'm sure others will as well.
So here's the deal. I watched that, I'm like, wow, it just sounds like he really wants to get people to watch his show on Monday. So part of me has this like skepticism that like maybe he went in and was just a complete ass to Elon Musk and was like Don Lemon, CNN Don Lemon, and went in knowing he was going to do that, trying to tick Elon off so he could get the show taken away and then like make more people watch it. So I'm still skeptical of that because he's put out some tiny little clips from the interview, but it hasn't been anything significant enough to really judge how it went. But X put out a post responding to that on its business account. It says, X is a platform that champions free speech, and we're proud to provide an open environment for diverse voices and perspectives. The Don Lemon Show is welcome to publish its content on X without censorship, as we believe in providing a platform for creators to scale their work and connect with new communities. However, like any enterprise, we reserve the right to make decisions about our business partnerships, and after careful consideration, X decided not to enter into a commercial partnership with the show. So that seems fair enough. From a business perspective, they're welcome to do whatever they want. And again, I want to see the interview. I guess he's going to get his wish because after seeing that video, yeah, I'm going to watch the interview and see, was it that bad that X should have pulled this agreement it had? I do think it's sort of, if I take Don at face value, it does tend to look bad for Elon. It's like, hey, you knew what Don Lemon was. You know what you were buying. I mean, the man was on CNN and he was very, very far left. And so it's like you entered into this agreement and proactively offered him this deal, knowing what kind of quote unquote journalism and commentary he did. So I'm curious, did Don Lemon really show Elon Musk anything he didn't know? So that's kind of where I'm at with it. So we'll see. But if you say you want diverse shows and you want to work with them, like, you gotta kind of follow through on that. So I'm going to watch on Monday and report back to you guys as to how it went.
Yeah, don't worry. You don't have to. We'll do it so you don't have to. Don't give them the extra
views. I don't have to?
No, I'm saying.
Are you going to watch it for me? Oh, yes. You guys, don't give them the extra views. I'll let you know what happened. So, pardon me. And then he's like, I'm like, is that a Starbucks commercial? Because he's drinking his Starbucks. And I'm like,
some of his people would not appreciate that.
Interesting.
That'd be very, you know.
All right. It is Thursday. So let's check in on what's happening in the Sunshine State.
All right.
It's our segment. What, Nicole?
Sorry.
Nicole, why is it always something with you?
Okay, go ahead.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Our segment Florida Report with just me, because Miranda's sick. She said she has a lot of anxiety because this is the first time. Why are you smiling at me?
Nothing.
You can come in. Be Florida Report with me.
Oh, yeah, no, that's fine. No, I'm sorry. I just wasn't prepared because I thought it was going to go differently in that intro.
Everything's going well.
I know. It's going great.
Miranda called this morning and she sounds terrible and she has so much anxiety because it's the first time she's been sick since she was hospitalized. Mm-hmm. She's like, am I wrong to be? Well, I said, don't let the anxiety get to you. But she's just, you know, and then just the breathing problems start. And so she was just sick last night, like a little cold sweats. And then she had a really sore throat this morning. So I said, Miranda, just go to the hospital. Just go out of an abundance of caution. Because just tell them, last time I was sick, I ended up intubated for 8 days and I'm just worried. Yeah. So I don't know if she's going to do that. I'll check in with her later. But I said, obviously, I'm a nothing if not a generous boss. Right. And I said, you know what? You just take the day off.
Fair.
Nicole and I can handle Florida Report. So what did you find for us, Nicole?
Oh, I found a couple stories for us. Let's... I can't go to them if I'm on the camera. So I'm going to switch back to you and then we'll go to them.
Oh, okay. All right. I just figured, you know, we'll do it together. So Ron DeSantis is sending troops to stop Haitian immigrants from coming into Florida via boat. This is from Fox News. DeSantis sends soldiers and aircraft to protect Florida from illegal immigrant boats amid Haiti unrest. He tweeted out, for quite some time, the state of Florida has been dedicating significant resources to combat illegal vessels coming to Florida from countries such as Haiti. Given the circumstances in Haiti, there's been a lot of civil unrest there. I have directed the Division of Emergency Management, the Florida State Guard, and state law enforcement agencies to deploy over 250 additional officers and soldiers and over a dozen air and sea craft to the southern coast of Florida to protect our state. No state has done more to supplement the under-resourced U.S. Coast Guard's interdiction efforts. We cannot have illegal aliens coming to Florida. And this is on a different, you know, obviously there's some different implications here, but, you know, there's been a long time Cuban nationals who try to come up and the wet foot, dry foot and try to get on the beaches and in Florida. And so it is interesting because Ron DeSantis gets all this crap for, you know, sending resources to Texas and helping there, but Florida does know firsthand, you know, the impacts of illegal immigration, and it just happens in a different way in Florida. So they're going.
I kind of wish that
full
guy
steam
was going for president. Darn it.
Oh, Ron DeSantis? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because he kind of has a handle on that.
He's technically still on the VP shortlist, although I find that very, very unlikely. But yeah, Ron DeSantis, I like him as a governor. It just bums me out that Trump's people, like, were so nasty to him and Trump was so nasty because he challenged Trump. It's like, you guys loved Ron DeSantis until he challenged Trump.
I know.
And then it was like, oh, he sucks. It's like, no, he doesn't. He's fine. He does some things, I think, take the freedom thing too far and actually go backward. But all right, let's keep moving on. This is a story I think Miranda would have liked. 500 pounds of pythons caught while mating rituals, while engaged in mating rituals. This is kind of sad.
It's so sad.
So there were 11 pythons, and, you know, Florida's always trying to get pythons out because they're invasive,
right,
and they're not good for all the other creatures out there. So there's always headhunting of pythons, right?
Look at that pile.
It says, it's like a pile, pile of pythons doing it. And that's when they went and killed them. You've got, you know, a little bit of a little Python orgy.
Well, I'm not sure if they're actually doing it. I read up a little bit on it. I think that all the males get together, prepare for the females or something. I don't know.
A little mating ritual. It's so, they're getting ready.
So they're getting ready. So they're like, ooh, like.
They're all. I'm ready. It says in all, 11 Bam. Pythons were caught. One was more than 16 feet long, bringing the tally to 500 pounds of snake. That's like, well, at least 100 pairs of boots. It says that marked a record catch for the Conservancy of Southwest Florida's decade-long battle to remove the invasive snakes and proof their once experimental radio telemetry program is succeeding. Both mating bowls were found, it's called a mating ball.
Because
they get together, were found when Conservancy staff put implants in male scout snakes, set them free, and followed the signals to remote areas where people seldom tread. So it's like, hey, let's put this tracker on them, and then when they're ready to do it and they get in their mating bowls, we'll go kill them. It says, quote, it's probably most people's worst nightmare, but for us, it's a good day. It's a win for native wildlife. And they're saying, because like most people wouldn't want to stumble upon a giant 500 pounds of snake flesh.
Taken out while you're doing it.
Yeah, and most people don't want to be taken out when they're in heat. Just terrible. It's like those stories you hear of people who like have a heart attack and die while they're having sex. And it's like, well, that's okay. Cause like they were going out on a high.
I think that was Matthew McConaughey's dad. He tells that in his book.
Yeah. He died while he was having sex.
Oh. While Matthew was on the set of Dazed and Confused.
Sad. I mean, it's sad, but it's like, you're going out on a high, but these snakes were cut down in the prime of mating season.
Poor guys. But yeah, I mean, I'm glad, but
Nasty. Well, that has been
the newest edition.
I'm waiting for you. That has been today's edition of Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Hopefully we did Miranda justice.
I'm really surprised you didn't tell the turkey story.
That's a long insider baseball story, and now I have to tell it.
No, not the whole story, just that you don't like when turkeys are taken out that way.
Well, yeah, because so Mike turkey hunts, and they set up these little chick decoys, right? Is that a good... And he's got his little turkey call, and they sit in the blind, and little males or females are sitting there, and the males come in all like... Let me get some. Get some. And then they mount the fake female. And then they're like, what the heck? And before they know what's going on, boom, dead. And I just think that's kind of messed up.
It's terrible.
That was my...
Why are we killing all these animals?
It's got a beard, right?
A high note. Yeah.
That's my...
Killing all these animals while they're
Somebody's
going
to screenshot that. Okay.
I'll use it in some of the... post for today. That'd be fun.
Anyway, before we get to questions and comments and our closing sanity check, which is actually going to bring some wonderful news out of the UK, I think this craziness with kids and gender therapy is coming to an end. I really do, and the UK is on the forefront of that. First, we talked to Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital every Thursday so that we can all be absolutely read up on the economy, what to expect. We can protect our retirement portfolios. One of the things, if you saw, Bitcoin is like going insane right now. And so Zach and I talked about some of these more non-traditional forms of investment and whether it's good to dabble in them. So Bitcoin is going bananas right now. How do we account for that? Is that kind of a similar situation, like buyer beware?
Yeah, Bitcoin is a tough one. The interesting thing is you're watching gold go ballistic at the same time. What we think is happening right now is the Chinese economy is really going through a tough spot, unlike anything they've really gone through really for the last 25 years or so. They're probably not going to show it in the official data, but the official data is just fiction over there. You can't try. I mean, it's whatever Xi Jinping decides it's going to be. So, you know, if he decides he wants the economy to grow at 5%, he's going to tell people to say it's growing at 5%. But they're stimulating, they're pumping a lot of money into the system. And if you told me that the Chinese government was going to start pumping and I had an understanding of the way that economy was set up right now and the challenge it was facing, I would expect Bitcoin and gold both to go through the roof. Why? Because they're in a tough spot. And I think they're probably a lot closer to looking at a currency devaluation than most people think about. And their citizens want to get money out of the country, right? They don't want to take that haircut. So I think a lot of money's pouring into Bitcoin. We got into Bitcoin, and again, in a moderate size, at about 35,000 a couple months back. And again, this is another example of how we're playing this, not with big positions, but with kind of tail positions, you know, small positions to keep us up with this stuff. And then we use protection underneath. So if we're wrong and it falls, we get right out, right? But no, I think what these things are showing is a ramp up in liquidity. I think they're reflecting the ridiculous amount of money our government is spending. And Bitcoin especially is just a wonderful catch basin for excess liquidity in the system, right? When liquidity goes up and governments start pumping, Bitcoin's going to go up. And so, but there are a lot of people out there, oh yeah, in Bitcoin, I trust, put everything in Bitcoin. Listen, if anybody's telling you to put everything in one thing, that's the one person you know is you shouldn't listen to.
Yeah.
Okay. Because we don't know. Bitcoin has no real intrinsic value. It has no real cash flows. So it's like gold in that way, right? You're just hoping it goes up.
Mm-hmm. But in not in gold, like gold in the way that gold does have an intrinsic value. So at the end of the day, like there is some actual value there. Bitcoin is just,
yeah. You've got thousands of years of, you know, human history that back that up. And then the other part of it too, is that gold has tremendous utility. If the price gets cheap enough, right? Like you can use gold for things. It's non-corrosive. It's a phenomenal conductor of electricity, right? There are things that, and it doesn't surprise me to see gold running here. And I will tell people that, you know, like for instance, if you told me that I had a bet to bet on NVIDIA over the next 5 years or gold miners, I would bet you a large amount of money that gold miners were throttle NVIDIA's returns, right? And okay. So this is what's so dangerous about these periods of times is the stuff that everybody is drawn to is the stuff that's already gone up. And the opportunity that's yielding is in the stuff nobody's paying attention to. And, you know, that's one of the reasons we're running right with this market right now, even though we've got a fraction of the risk exposed because, you know, we're just being more creative about where to put things. And, you know, we can still generate those returns and not take all that crazy risk.
Yeah, creativity without all the risk and making sure that you're protecting your hard-earned retirement. That is what Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital specialize in. I suggest having a free Know Your Risk portfolio review with Zach. He also hosts, by the way, the Know Your Risk radio podcast, if you're interested. Their portfolio review is just a great way to see if you're overexposed to risk. There's absolutely no obligation. You can schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All right, before we get to our closing sanity check in the UK taking action to ban puberty blockers, which I hope is the beginning of a run on sanity, let's get to some questions and comments from the stream today. Matthew Cook says, more Brandy turkey hunt and mating impressions, please. I can make that happen, sure. I'm sure when I get home, my husband will be like, your turkey impression was terrible. I'm working on it. All right, Bill Biz with a $20 super chat says it would be interesting to see the total number of billable hours the AG's office allocated to suing the Trump administration. Billable to Washington taxpayers, of course. I'll bet Trump photo will appear in every single Ferguson ad. Yeah, it'll either be about an ad, a pro-Ferguson ad talking about I went after Donald Trump, or it'll be like an ad against Dave Ricard that says that's his best friend. Just over it. Rick Johnson says, the criminal walks, the law abider is made the victim. Whatever happened to doing the right thing? The laws in this state are literally criminal. And I don't know if you're talking about the Jason Roth story there, but yeah, I agree. Matt Gilbert says, quote, this is what reparations looks like. What does that mean? What is he referring to, the Jason Roth thing?
Giving back.
Oh, give it, house. Just letting a black person live in a place rent-free for a year. Kelly Dowell Tarp says,
he's quoting that's what the stranger said. He's quoting the stranger.
No, they didn't say that. I think that's him being facetious.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think the stranger
said
that.
Matt, clarify.
I think that's Matt making up a quote. I'm pretty confident of that. Kelly Dowell Tarp says, awesome update to start the show. Still doesn't feel like justice was served. Just goes to show criminals have the rights. Time to make a change. Vote this year. And look, it's not a criminal matter to not pay your rent. But to me, it is like criminal behavior. I mean, you're stealing from someone. He stole, I don't know, 40 to 50 grand from Jason Roth. It's as good as theft. And I do think it should be against the law. In terms of like criminal penalties. Y says, so happy for Jason Roth, but still ridiculous. He's stuck with all that trash and all the money he's lost. But yay, don't ever rent again. Boo Boo Bear with a $10 super chat says, Inslee is the GOAT? Now, I don't know what GOAT stands for. Mo Sterling responded and said, yeah, greatest overbearing authoritarian tyrant. Yeah, if that's what GOAT stands for, I agree. Clay B, Canada does not have a Second Amendment. Firearm ownership there is so severely restricted that homeowners can't protect themselves. And who has the guns? Oh, the criminals have the guns. Yeah. And then you can't have a gun as a law-abiding citizen to protect yourself from the criminals. So that's how that's going in Canada, in case you're wondering what that would look like in the U.S. Debbie Kroll says, people need to quit voting for Dems in order for law and order to come back. Yeah, we need a little break from that, for sure. Julie Hafen says, it's the criminals' time to shine, including the politicians who protect them. Oh, some more super chats. Baron of Grey Matter with a $2 super chat says, my Irish uncle Patio Furniture says, happy St. Paddy's Day. When is St. Paddy's Day? This Sunday, right? Mm-hmm. Mm. Maybe this $2 super chat, I can buy like a little jello shot, green jello shot.
Okay, we'll be on the road that day.
We will. Oh, maybe we should. Can you, while I'm in sanity check, pull up that...
Sure.
Thank you. Baron of Grey Matter with another super chat. Just doing it in two installments here. $5. Tell Miranda to try mullein tincture. You can get it on Amazon. Clears lung problems quickly. Just check with the pharmacist to make sure no conflicts. And it works. Okay. I will have her look into that. But yes, probably we'll have to double check it with a doctor just to be sure. All right. Good comments per the usual. Let's get to our closing sanity check. The UK is going to stop prescribing puberty blockers as a routine matter of course to minors. I think that this is a really good development, and we've seen some of these European countries change course on this and actually look at comprehensive studies that have been done to show that some of the gender quote-unquote care that we're giving to kids, there's no good research that shows that the benefits outweigh the risks of it and outweigh the possible harm that can be done. So this from the BBC, NHS England, to stop prescribing puberty blockers. They will no longer routinely be prescribed to children at gender identity clinics. The decision comes after a review found there was, quote, not enough evidence that they are safe or effective. Puberty blockers, which pause the physical changes of puberty, will now only be available as part of research. And that still is concerning because it's like, okay, keep studying the issue, but are you just going to find ways to make kids part of research so you can continue to give them puberty blockers? I don't know. There are also going to be, so if there are, it says right now only 100 young people in England are currently prescribed puberty blockers by the NHS. They will continue to be able to use that treatment. So they're not going to stop it, I guess, if it's already been started in those particular youth. So they're going to continue to study this issue. But, you know, it's crazy that something like this would have been started without proper research anyway. Like, oh, let's just, you know, stop puberty midstream for kids. Let's go in and do some of this gender identity surgery and change the outcomes for kids for the rest of their lives without real proper lengthy studies into the harm of it. And I do think it's only a matter of time before the United States realizes this as well. I think there's starting to be sort of a push in that direction. And we just had, you know, Tamara Pitsky on, who is the whistleblower from MultiCare in Tacoma, who said she was told, as a therapist, just check a box so the kids who come to you, whatever their problems are, no matter how severe trauma they might have experienced that might make them believe that they're supposed to be a different gender, don't ask questions about it. Just check a box, send them to the gender clinic so they can go ahead and start whatever sort of gender care that they're able to get legally. And that's just wrong. And I think more people like Tamara coming out and also more detransitioners. We've heard from more and more young people who went through transitions or hormone therapy when they were young, who grew up and were like, oh God, you know, I don't know what I was thinking. And now the damage can't be undone. And the reason we're just now starting to hear those stories is we're just now in that in that window of time where we had this gender identity starting to be pushed on kids, so more and more of them were convinced through social pressure that they were some other gender, and now they're finally getting into adulthood and realizing the mistake that it was. And we're only going to hear more of those stories. So look, you're an adult. If you're an adult and you want to do these things, whatever, you know, you be happy, and it's none of my business. It doesn't impact me. But when it comes to kids, as a society, we need to take a harder look at these things, and the UK has clearly done that. So sanity making a comeback. Nicole mentioned we're going to be in Richland, Washington on Saturday for a Feed the Force event at the VFW in Richland on George Washington Way there from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. If you are a veteran, you get in for free. If you are a uniformed member of law enforcement, yes, you can come in your uniform. You're welcome. I'm going to feed you. I won't hand feed you, but, you know, we're going to feed you. And I'm going to have some remarks. Congressman Dan Newhouse is going to be there. The local sheriff is going to be there and have some remarks as well. And I think just a great opportunity to give back to and support the men and women who keep us safe. And proceeds are going to go to the Washington State Patrol Memorial Foundation. So that is a very timely charity for them to contribute proceeds to. So tickets are on sale right now, and they're super cheap.
Feedtheforce.eventbrite.com, or yes, just Google Feed the Force.
I put it out on my social media pages, too. Feedtheforce.eventbrite.com in Richland, Washington this Saturday. Would love, love, love to see you there. All right, that has been it for this last live show of the week here on Undivided. Coming up this Sunday, the mayor of Berrien is going to join us. Remember, they're locked in this battle with King County that refuses to enforce its no camping ordinance. So suffice it to say, the mayor of Berrien is none too pleased. He's going to join us to talk about this beef on Sundays with subscribers. You can sign up for just $5 a month, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. So we'll see subscribers on Sunday, the rest of you, live show on Monday.